and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports. And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
But he has a shock in store for him. He has two great chances, Slim and none, and Slim's out of town.
Pedro Fernandez.
I wanted to do the right thing.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million-dollar sports byline studios in San Francisco. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now, of knocking out all bums. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I am your modest host. I'm also an award-winning writer, four-time Golden Glove champion, so I think I know my way around the fight world. But if you want to correct me, you can. We have a toll-free 800 number, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or if you want to get me via text, you can as well. The studio text number? 415-275-1713. That's 415-275-1713. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, today we come to you on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius, XM Satellite Radio, our brand new channel, 217. So we're rocking and rolling on channel 217, Sirius, XM Satellite Radio, both Saturday and Sunday, of course, at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. On today's show, we'll take a look at the hottest division, not only because Canelo Alvarez is in it, because it looks like it's heating up. I'm talking about 168 pounds. We'll bring in boxing's PhD after the break, Mr. Socrates Palmer. We'll also talk about Manny Pacquiao and Ryan Garcia. Is it a real fight? Is it an exhibition? I'm not a big guy in exhibitions. I'll talk about that after the break because, you know, wrestling matches are exhibitions. In other words, you sort of know what's going to happen before they start. Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, exhibition. Come on, let them fight for real in the Middle East, and we'll see what happens. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. After the break, more Ring Talk on Sports Byline. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is the greatest fighter of all times, next to me.
12 minutes past the hour. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide for Saturday, of course, coming to you the Saturday edition, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, live on Sports Byline. Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific Time as well, live on Sports Byline, of course, coming to you from the Sports Byline studios. You know, back when I was defending Golden Glove titles, they pulled this special weigh-in crap on me. They said I had to weigh in 2 weeks early at 141 pounds. In other words, the fight weight was 139 pounds, but you had to make 141 pounds 2 weeks before. They said they had to do this in order to bracket us all. And I thought they were trying to do it in order to make us old guys suffer a little bit. But the bottom line is, I weighed in at 141 at the Concord Pavilion, which is about 25 or 30 miles from where I live. And on the way home, I stopped at the Sun Valley Dairy because I was supposed to buy some ice cream for a party. Well, I bought 24 ice cream cups, 24 of these little ice cream cups. I ate all 24 ice cream cups in the parking lot. I never went to the party. They never got the ice cream. The kids are still screaming. Bottom line is, making weight is far more difficult than actual fighting. And I had sort of starved my way down to 141 and not done it the right way. I mean, had I been disciplined and made weight as you're supposed to, it's a science. I was just crashing, okay? So I crashed a couple times there. But having made 139 a couple weeks later and done well, I guess it was okay. But at the end of the day, making weight is far more difficult than fighting people. I kid you not. On that note, we take it to the Bronx and bring in the Bronx Bomber himself, boxing's PhD, Mr. Socrates Palmer. And how are you, and how's the young man, Sebastian, doing?
Sebastian's doing quite well. He's growing every day, and very, very blessed to have him in our life. Thank you for asking.
Okay, Puerto Rico, known for its boxing, history, legacy, the whole nine yards. I didn't go into the names, but we got a new kid on the block. His name is Berlanga, Edgar Berlanga, 16-0 with 16 first-round knockouts. why do I think that he can't catch? Why is it I'm sort of inclined to believe that guys that run off these incredible knockout records somehow don't catch as well as guys that don't punch that well? Is it a myth? Am I lost there? Talk to me.
Well, you can only go by history. And we have seen guys that are tremendous punchers, however, have suspect chins. You know, it's kind of like live by the sword, die by the sword. One of my favorite fighters coming up was Donald Curry back in the day. You know, tremendous puncher. But I believe he was stopped 4 times himself. In recent memory, Randall Bailey, tremendous knockout ratio. But he was stopped, I think, about 3 or 4 times himself. So historically, you do see that. Edgar Berlanga, the jury's still out. I mean, he's 16-0 against very nondescript competition. And I understand. I mean, the thing is, with fighters today, especially when you're with a monster company like Top Rank, your career is we're seeing it unfold on television. So there's those fights that maybe you would get against the, you know, the tomato can of the month, you're seeing it as opposed to just reading about it, you know. So, you know, the jury's still out of my book until he fights someone credible. From my understanding, he was to come back into the mix in April against the notorious TBA. So probably another knockout, and they're building up a character, you know, and I respect that. That's his gimmick. He's a knockout fighter. You know, he's got this first round knockout streak going. But what's going to happen when he faces somebody that says, okay, you buzz me. Let's see if you can take mine. That's what we're going to see, the true, if Edgar Berlanga is a real fighter or not. He's a New Yorker like myself, comes from a great lineage of Puerto Rican fighters, and he's kind of being seen as the guy to be the heir apparent. And Top Rank has done a great job with the Puerto Rican fighters, Miguel Cotto, of course. And the New York fight scene really thrives on a Puerto Rican fighter. You know, when Felix Trinidad lost to Bernard Hopkins, another great puncher, New York boxing really suffered. And then Miguel Cotto was able to pick up kind of like right where he left off, and he stole out the Garden many times. And I think that's what they're eventually looking at with Berlanga. Hello?
You brought up, of course, Donald Curry, the Cobra from Texas, and of course they trained him hard. They used to train him like 12, 15 rounds sparring in the sun. I kid you not, in these hot gyms down there, and I think Fort Worth and around that area, straight up though, he was a good fighter. But I ask you this, how the hell did he lose to Lloyd Hunnigan? And didn't Lloyd Hunnigan lose to Jorge Vaca? And if ever there was a guy I could beat, now I'm not bragging or boasting, it was Jorge Vaca.
That was at one point considered maybe the greatest upset of all time when that happened. I remember on HBO. Sometimes you take a guy lightly. And Lloyd Hunnigan, you know, he had his moment in the sun. You know, and
don't you think his moment in the sun was when he flipped out psychologically or had a psychiatric hold put on him a few years ago? That was a little bit more bizarre than some of his in the ring antics.
Yeah, he definitely has had a challenged life post-ring. But he's got his place in history, you know. He's kind of like the Buster Douglas of the welterweight division. You know, he had his moment.
You know, speaking of Donald Curry, of course, him and Mike McCallum, that was my honeymoon fight. I took the wife, the mother, my mother and my stepfather and the entire family went down to Las Vegas, of course, and watched his fight. And I told my stepfather to bet on McCallum. He was a bigger guy. I thought he would weigh in about 170 pounds. He'd be too big for Donald Curry, who was a welterweight coming up. And, my stepfather kept saying to me, but he's 2.5 to 100. I said, my grandpa, just listen to me. Right? So when grandpa went and dropped $500 on Mike McCallum, and I think he was like 2.5 to 100 dog, all right? So after the fight, grandpa was bragging about how slick he was, betting this $500, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? 2.5 to 1 odds. But yeah, Mike McCallum starched him with one punch.
That was it's actually very underrated in terms of the great fight. They fought that fight at a close distance from the first round all the way until it ended. And it was just, you were kind of like sitting on like pins and needles, like somebody's going to get hurt because they were throwing really nice shots. Mike McCallum, one of the underrated great fighters of all time. He put the Cobra to sleep. He was the mongoose that night, you know, and, really, really good fight. One that stands out in my childhood. Very underrated. I would definitely recommend anybody to go back on YouTube and check that out.
Mike McCallum, of course, the body snatcher, what is he, like 35-9, I think was his actual record as a pro. I'll check that out. No, that was his amateur record. As a pro, he was 49-5 with 36 KOs. Never got stopped. One draw. One time, oh, here's a good one. We're running around the MGM Grand Hotel. I think we're trying to find a press conference, post-fight or something like that. We're going, and we can hear Don King scream, but we can't find him. We can hear him, but we can't find him. So we don't know exactly where he was. And Mike McCallum was with me, and he said, Pedro, why did you write that I was 39 years old or I was 40 years old? Whatever I wrote in Flash Magazine, I wrote that he was much older than he said he was because I traced him back to the 1974 Golden Gloves in Florida. Okay, so if he was 18 years old in 1974, I said add the numbers, whole nine yards. So he's chasing me around the MGM Grand. We're having fun. Pedro, how could you say that? How could you say that? I said, but I also said, yeah, I think you're one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I think he was. I think a body snatcher was probably one of the most underrated fighters in history without a doubt. And I'll tell you the truth. Tommy Hearns ducked him. Sugar Ray Leonard ducked him. Marvin Hagler ducked him. Roberto Duran ducked him. None of those guys wanted any of McCallum. None of them.
McCallum, unfortunately kind of got the bigger fights towards the end of his career, for James Toney,
Roy Jones.
He is Roy Jones, right? Maybe too good for his own good, you know, and, you mentioned those four legends. I mean, it's kind of hard to say that they ducked, but I guess, I mean, they never hooked it up, you know, for some reason. I guess he wasn't worth the risk, but Mike McCallum, very underrated. The body snatcher, he lived in Brooklyn for a long time. I don't know if he still does, but,
Vegas, baby.
Tough man. Jamaican descent, I believe.
Great fighter, no doubt about that. And a very, very, very proud, native of Jamaica. And of course, they're proud of him, the body snatcher. You know, I went down there and all they wanted to talk about was Mike McCallum when we talked boxing in Jamaica. I was there on vacation. They were there, of course, to, talk boxing. Hey, Sock, you got another segment in you?
Absolutely, sir.
All right, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live World. When we come back after the break, I'll press boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer, on a couple of other issues, including Ryan Garcia and Manny Pacquiao. Is it a fight? Is it an exhibition? What the hell's going on there? We'll find out after the break. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
I hope that you understand not one single person, not one single committee can do anything for boxing. It is absolutely necessary that we all get together, we work together, we respect each other, we like and love each other. I hope that we understand that by being public figures, we are targets for character assassination. I hope that we understand that if we want to be leaders, we have to convince with actions, to show always good faith, to love boxing and love boxers. We should not answer a slap with a slap, but with action and facts.
I played Don Jose Suleiman because I posed that question to our boxing PhD, Socrates Palmer. Boxing sort of is you know, split up as the country is politically. I mean, the bottom line is there's certain guys with certain promoters, and one promoter won't work with another in order to make a super fight. You know, back in the days when there were two basically super promoters, and Bob Arum and Don King, they hated each other in public, but in private they got together and made money. Why can't Al Heyman and Bob Arum and these guys all hook it up?
Ah, boy. I don't know if it's egos or just the money. I mean, they must be making good money without each other, or else, you know, why would they cut their nose to spite their face? You know, like I always say, at the end of the day, the boxing fan is the one that gets hurt the most. Then probably the fighters' legacies will always be in question. You know, were they really the best fighters of their era? Were they really the best welterweight at this time? Which is a dilemma that we have going on right now with Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. You know, who's really the best 147 pounder? I mean, it depends on what side of the fence you're on. You know, if you're team PBC, you're screaming Errol Spence. If you favor the top rank in ESPN, then Bud is your man. The fighters are getting paid good nowadays, even without the mega fight. So maybe that clamoring, you know, kind of like grabbing a promoter by the lapel and say, hey, man, you know, I want this fight, you know. Maybe that's part of the reason that it's not happening, but I don't want to get too far off your topic. Why aren't these fights happening? I don't know. I guess the networks have to put the pressure on.
I don't think it's a network suck. I mean, I don't know who's got to do it, but I mean, Charlo, the 160-pound Charlo, is stuck over there wherever he's at, Fox or Showtime, whatever, and he can keep fighting guys like Scott Cuddy, and it's not doing him any good. I mean, I really don't think it is. As far as if he wants to make it to the superstar level, he's got to step up and fight Canelo Alvarez, at least make a move at 168, and great fighters move up in weight. Of course, that's why I slammed Marvin Hagler, the fact that he made his bones by beating up on smaller guys, and Roberto Duran, who almost beat him, and Sugar Ray Leonard, who did beat him, and of course the war with Tommy Hearns, and then his war with John Mugabe. Those were all guys that were smaller than Marvin Hagler.
But Marvin himself wasn't necessarily a large middleweight.
True. I mean, got a good point there.
About 5'9"? Maybe
good point. You know, I used to watch him train in the last couple of days at Johnny Taco's gym for the Hearns fight, for the Duran fight, and for the Leonard fight. And the Mugabe fight as well, his last four fights. It was quite an experience. Johnny Taco loved me, and he brought me in there like I was his brother in this, and he said, you can train. I said, what do you mean I can train? He goes, you can, don't worry about it. You can train. He goes, this is Marvin's time. He goes, no, you're my kid. You're my kid. And the reason why I bring that up is that, you know, he's been gone now, I think, since 1993. And he was such a mentor. I remember going to Las Vegas the first time and him telling me, you want to do radio? This is what he said to me. You want to do radio? I said, yeah, I want to do a boxing radio show. And Johnny Taco says to me, he goes, and you want to come to Vegas and do it? And I said, yeah. He goes, man, he goes, this town chews people up and spits them out. He goes, I don't think you're going to be able to make it. So when he did the last show with me a week before he died, he remembered that first show a decade or so prior. And he said, you know, remember when he met me in 1980, he said, you remember when I told you that you'd never make it in Vegas, son, blah, blah, blah. He goes, you're on three radio stations here. Anyway, the reason why I bring him up is that, of course, Johnny Taco's gym is still rocking and rolling. I was in, when the last time I was in Las Vegas, so I always drive by and go to the parking lot, of course, behind the gym. That's where Donald Curry and the whole crew, man. I mean, it was just, we had wonderful times there. Hagler trained there. Tyson trained there. Tyson also trained at the Golden Glove gym. But back in the days when Las Vegas was happening and boxing was jumping, Johnny Tacos was the place to go. So I went off subject there. Let's go back to subject. Ryan Garcia and Manny Pacquiao. Is this a fight or is it an exhibition? Or is it just BS?
Can it be a little bit of everything? you know, at first, you know, when the rumors started coming out, it was a fight. Then something had came out the next day that it's an exhibition. Then I saw Ryan put something out that it's a fight. So, you know, to me, it's a joke if it's not a real fight. You know, why, you know, what's the point? I mean, it's not like, now if Manny Pacquiao was, let's say, coming out of retirement, okay, that's a different story, but Manny Pacquiao is still an active fighter. Although he hasn't fought, in a while since he defeated Behrman, but he's still an active fighter, and I believe he holds a world title. Ryan Garcia and Manny Pacquiao, if the fight happens, let it happen. I mean, it's kind of like the natural progression of boxing. I mean, we've seen this a million times with the young star on the rise takes out the old legend, you know, in this case. It would be something that would springboard Ryan into megastardom, I mean, worldwide, I mean, beyond the Instagram. I mean, if he's able to retire Manny Pacquiao, it's a great fight. Right? You know, I hope it does happen. Now, if I'm Ryan Garcia, be careful what you ask for. You know, for some reason, this old man is still pretty damn good. And if he thought, you know, Luke Campbell, you know, could punch a little bit.
Okay. And Luke Campbell ain't nearly as fast as Manny Pacquiao, even at his age. Mikey Garcia making noise, of course. He initially said a couple months ago after Teofimo Lopez upset Vasyl Lomachenko, he would drop to 135. Now he's back at 147. He wants to fight at 147. Lopez, is Lopez headed for Australia? Is that almost certain?
That's what it seems like. Is this waiting on the official word from the top rank? I'm expecting that it happens probably sometime before the end of the month that they make that fight official. It's a good fight, you know. Cambosos is not great, but, you know, he fights in an exciting style. You figure that he's going to be right in front of Teofimo Lopez, and that's pretty good. That's a pretty good thing. If you are promoting Teofimo Lopez, it's a fight that's tailor-made for Lopez to win in spectacular fashion. I believe they know each other from they've sparred before, so there's no animosity from what I understand. And if they can make it in Australia in front of a crowd, that's great.
Okay.
I hope it happens.
Question for you. Should kids 10 years old be hitting each other in the head?
Wow. I've seen it, you know, and I'm sure you've seen it. You know,
That's a yes or a no question there, Saki. Now I'm not gonna let you wiggle on that one. Should 10-year-old kids, should even if they had headgear on, should they be getting hit with gloves?
I don't see anything wrong with it as long as it's controlled. You know, I don't want to see, you know, cockfighting, you know, just kids wailing away and just, you know, if it's done controlled and sanctioned, I don't see anything wrong with it. I know it's been done for a long time.
Sock, let me say this. I won't mention their names, okay? All right? But I know four guys that boxed when they were 8, 9 years old, okay? And they're all local. They were all pretty good amateurs. They're dead or they're punchy. There's no exception to the rule here. There's absolutely no exception to the rule. The brain is not set yet, and I think when you're getting pounded around at 9 and 10 years old, I just don't think that's good. I mean, I got away with it boxing at 12. Having a few little smokers down at the Boys Club in San Francisco. I got away with it, okay? But I just, man, if it was my kid, I would say no.
Yeah. I mean, 12, okay. You're just about a teenager. You know, I don't know. I mean, you know what? They allow Pop Warner football, you know, and that's, you know, that's not a walk in the park. Kids get concussed with that and even soccer.
Yeah, you know, I never got permission to box at all. I remember my mother found out, like, you know, through the grapevine.
Well, you know, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to you. So your discipline, got you in the shape that you still keep yourself at, and, you know, learn how to defend yourself, which is a pretty good thing in the mean streets of San Fran, right?
Yeah, I guess it's okay. Anyway, I've had a good run. I wish you the best. You have a great weekend. Kiss Sebastian. Of course, tell him the Ring Talk family is pulling for him each and every week to get bigger and stronger and keep eating his food and pooping and all that kind of good stuff. Just doing what Sebastian needs to do right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend and enjoy the Super Bowl tomorrow.
Boxing. Who's going to, real quick, 10 seconds, who's going to win?
I'm a Raider fan. There's no way I could root for Kansas City.
I got to run then. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Sock copped out on the Super Bowl. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
When the night has come and the land is dark.
Guess who's singing here? Fetty doesn't believe it, but this is a man that was born Cassius Clay in 1942. I'm talking about Muhammad Ali singing Stand By Me. Of course, it was a hit by Ben E. King, formerly of the Drifters. I think it was with the Drifters. But the bottom line is he brought the song to the Drifters. They didn't want to do it, so he did it by himself, and it sold more records than the Drifters ever sold in their entire lives or careers. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Muhammad Ali doing Stand By Me. I brought this up because there was a photo of Joe Frazier and the Knockouts performing. You know, of all the heavyweights that I saw sing, and I think I saw Larry Holmes sing, I saw James Ellis, or Jimmy Ellis, or Ali used to tell me, you mean James Ellis? James Ellis and Ali singing there, you know, and Joe Frazier, and not too many of these guys could sing too well. I mean, they weren't Lou Rawls, per se, but I give it to this. We're going to have a special on Joe Frazier next week. In fact, we're going to bring in Richard Sloan. Sloan without the, of course, a guy formerly from the Kronk Gym. He was, Joe Frazier was his mentor. He was just tight with Joe, no doubt about it. We'll talk about Joe, of course. We're approaching the 50th anniversary of Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali, March 8th, 1971. Of course, the fight that stopped the entire world. Ali getting dropped in the 15th round, getting really hurt in the 12th round. But I tell you, it was the fight of the century. The world actually came to a stop. It came to a stop. I remember looking out the window, listening to the fight on the radio. I was a kid looking out the window. They weren't actually doing the fight on the radio. They would have a round. They would say, round three is already over. And then they would tell you what happened in round three. So it was like news. Okay. But I remember looking out the window and there were no buses going by. I mean, there was nothing happening. The world had completely stopped. Of course, you'll get to enjoy that in depth next week. I hope to bring in Marvis Frazier, of course, the son of Joe Frazier. That himself was a heavyweight contender, a bit, I think, mismanaged by his father. I might even ask him that. I mean, you know, Marvis Frazier was an outstanding amateur fighter. And what I mean by that is he was a boxer. He moved around. He was slick. I mean, he didn't punch all that hard. And then when he turned pro, Joe wanted him to throw smoke, you know, like Joe did with that left hook. And there's only one Joe Frazier. I mean, I will say this. I didn't think Joe was the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. But I will say he had the greatest mental strength of any heavyweight champion I've ever seen. That first fight against Ali, that 15-round encounter, when I watched him like pull himself together mentally, his mental strength was concerned, I never seen a guy that mentally strong. Props to Joe Frazier, of course. The man that now has a statue, in Philadelphia, of course, Rocky Balboa had a statue in Philadelphia, and that caused a bit of a stink, but Joe Frazier finally got his statue. Boxing a little bit slow. I don't think it's a little bit slow. Of course, I think things will be happening. Of course, Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury are going to hook it up for the, I guess, all of the heavyweight belts. There's like 19 belts out there. They're going to hook it up for 18 of the 19 belts or maybe 19 of the 20 belts or something like that. Anyway, it's going to go down in the Middle East, and they are arguing over who will be who will be brought to the ring first, who will be introduced first. That's what the fights boil down to. I guess that might be money. That might be money, but a lot of times it's ego. I remember telling you a couple of weeks ago, fortnight ago, how Jerry Cooney, then the number one ranked heavyweight contender in the world, how in 1982 when he fought Larry Holmes, how he was introduced after Larry. In other words, they introduced the heavyweight champion of the world first, Larry Holmes, and then they introduced Jerry Cooney, the White Hope second. Of course, that infuriated Larry. Of course, Larry and Jerry are good friends now, but man, that just had the bad blood going, and that's why I think that when Larry could have stopped him in the second round, Larry let Jerry stick around a little while longer so he could play some more bongos on his head. Well, it looks like Floyd Mayweather still wants to come back some more. What is he, almost 50 years old now, 48 years old? Wants to fight 50 Cent, the rapper. I mean, come on, man. And he wanted to fight that other YouTube clown a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you know, it's all fine and dandy, I guess, if you want to do this kind of stuff, but the bottom line is he's suckering some of you out there into paying for it. Of course, you were the same people that bought into him being a great fighter. I mean, I couldn't believe that. He pulled off the greatest con in the history of boxing. And take that back. In American history, since Paul Newman and Robert Redford in a movie called The Sting, which was all about one big con. Okay, so I think the Mayweather career, I think it was a sting. I just think it was a big sting. I mean, granted, he fought guys, but he didn't fight guys. He boxed guys. And, of course, that safety first stuff, that might make it with some of you. But the bottom line is you have to dare to be great. And he never dared to be great. In fact, you have to gamble to be great. I remember Ray Leonard telling me that in 1989 we're sitting around a hot tub in West Palm Beach, Florida. And him telling me, I said, what, Ray, what's the difference between a good fighter and a great fighter? He said, the willingness to gamble. You've got to be able to gamble, okay? Well, Floyd Mayweather never gambled in like 48 or 49 fights. And the fact that he had to fight the kickboxer, the MMA guy, of course, he just got beat a fortnight ago. I'm talking about Dustin Poirier, of course, lighting up Conor McGregor. But he had to fight Conor McGregor and come back, made a fortune doing that. So I guess he figures he can make a fortune basically fighting just anybody, just appearing like, and of course, he fought some Japanese guy, made a few million bucks a few months ago. So the bottom line is, why doesn't he just go away? I'm talking about Floyd Mayweather. Just go away, man. If you want to promote, that's fine. Push Devin Haney to the upper echelons of the lightweight division. Make him more than the email champion. Of course, he is a WBC champion. Make him more than the email champion. Of course, Teofimo Lopez calls him the email champion. Of course, we talked earlier about Lopez, the undefeated lightweight champion. Was he 17-0 now? Of course, he's coming to us from his people are from Honduras, but he's from Brooklyn. Of course, he's going down to Australia to take on Mr. Calabrasas, and that should be a good fight for as long as it lasts because the Australian's tough, and he likes to come forward, so it should be an action fight. Outside of that, somebody sent me a text this week asking about Larry Holmes. And of course, we had Larry on the show a couple of weeks ago. Larry's just kicking it. You know, he's just kicking it in eastern Pennsylvania. He sort of likes being retired and old, and he sort of sounded a little lazy when I talked to him on the phone a couple weeks ago. Said the wife was in the kitchen cooking where she needed to be or something like that. You know, just typical Larry Holmes. But Larry is underrated, without a doubt. I mean, when you look back at history, I remember him sparring with Muhammad Ali, seeing films of this guy sparring with Muhammad Ali in the 1970s and saying to myself, who is this guy? Who is this sparring partner? Well, he turned out to be the Easton Assassin. Of course, shorted in the 72 Olympics, didn't make it to the Olympics per se, but he was a man, without a doubt. I mean, as far as heavyweights were concerned, he went undefeated, captured the WBC heavyweight title in 1978 with that 15-round decision over Ken Norton. Of course, Ken Norton, and he went 14 rounds, and the fight was even. 7-7 on two of the three scorecards, I believe. Maybe all three scorecards. Anyway, the 15th round determined who would be champion. And later that night, Larry Holmes and his wife, and he still married her, they both took a dip in the Caesars Palace swimming pool with their clothes on. I kid you not. And you know, Larry gets a lot of rip. He gets a lot of heat for his, you know, saying that that Rocky Marciano couldn't carry his jock strap and all that kind of good stuff. Of course, he didn't bust Marciano's record. Marciano was like 49-0 as a heavyweight champion. Larry was 48-0. He took on Michael Spinks. It was a questionable fight as far as the decision was concerned. After 15 rounds, I was there. I was saying to myself, man, what the hell is going on here? I mean, you know, this is sort of like a tough fight to score, a real, real tough fight to score. As it turns out to be, it was a decision for Spinks. Of course, Spinks would come back and win a decision in the rematch. And it was basically the end of Larry Holmes' big run as heavyweight. Of course, he would come back. Comeback fight against Mike Tyson where he got bounced off the canvas, and you remember him appearing on the show, and I asked him, you know, Larry, why would you come back and want to fight this monster? Why would you want to fight him? And he said, because, you know, I need to pay for a building. I said, what do you mean you need to pay for a building? Because I just bought this building, this office building for $3.5 million. I need to pay for it. So I, you know, called Don King and said, I need a fight. So he got me $3.5 million to fight this fight against Mike Tyson. I'm going to go out there and give it my all. He was 38 years old, much like Muhammad Ali in 1980 when he took on Larry Holmes. Of course, that fateful night, October 2nd, 1980, I'll never, ever forget it. I was there. I remember, you know, we're in Vegas for the very first time, me and my crew, my cousin John Hector Martinez was there, the Duran's former manager and the amateur standout. We were all kicking it in Vegas, but after Ali got lit up like that, we weren't in a celebratory mood, of course. And then the next day, I remember going to the press conference at Caesar's Palace, and this was a time when you could actually walk, they were sitting on a dice in a room where you could actually walk up to Muhammad Ali and ask him to sign an autograph. So when I walked up to him, I remember telling Mr. Larry was sort of first there. I remember, good fight, Mr. Holmes, something to that extent. And I moved down to Ali and tears started rolling out of my eyes. I just couldn't control it because here was Muhammad Ali wearing sunglasses and he was all beat up. I mean, this was like my hero of heroes. I mean, he was all beat up, and I remember I was thinking about my dad and my grandfather and my uncles and all this kind of good stuff, and they all had different views of Muhammad Ali or Cassius Clay, call it what you want, but here he was sitting in front of me, a 38-year-old man, beaten up, wearing a pair of sunglasses, you know, to hide the wounds that he had gotten the night before from Larry Holmes. That was probably the saddest day of my boxing life, October 3rd, 1980, to sit there at that press conference and watch him. And the reason why I bring that up is I was going through some some old scrapbooks this week, and I found that autograph that Muhammad Ali gave me October 3rd, 1980. That was a bit of a memorable event. But you know what? You have to realize that, like Socrates said a little bit earlier, boxing's young eats boxing old. It's just the way it is. I mean, it's just the way it is. It's like that in just about any sport, but in boxing, the blood shows, so it's more evident, okay? I'm telling you, the young guys always chew up on the old guys. This is the way it's done. Speaking of young guys and old guys, he's not young and he's not old, but he is the champ as far as 168 pounds is concerned. Of course, Canelo Alvarez, he's going to take on a guy, of course, the number one WBC contender, Avni Yildirim. Of course, he's like 21-2, 12 KOs. Of course, he's going to be trained by Joel Diaz. Joel Diaz says big things are going to happen here. Of course, he's got to say that. Good luck with that. I don't think Canelo's going to take anybody on right now that even is a threat to him. I just don't. In fact, the guys that he's fighting, according to my Mexican sources, are not endearing him with the Mexican fans. In other words, they're sort of ticked off that Canelo Alvarez keeps fighting guys like Scott Cuddy and Pedro Fernandez and, to a lesser extent, Hector Martinez, and things like that. They're just tired of it. I mean, he's going to fight the number one guy, the number one WBC guy here, and I guess that's all good. Mr. Abney, wish him the well. Of course, that's going to go down February 27th on DAZN. Of course, he's signed with DAZN, I guess, for a couple of fights. The next two fights, the next fight will be with Billy Joe Saunders in May. Saunders, an undefeated gypsy coming to us from the UK, holds the WBO 168-pound belt. He's undefeated. And, of course, after that, what's he going to do? I think he needs to fight one of the – I think the Charlo brother needs to step up to 168. Or get this. Him and Charlo agreed to do a fight at 164. Let's go halfway in between. Let's go right down the middle in between. If this fight's to be made, let's make some sacrifices on both sides. Of course, Canelo's saying, well, I'm the king. Bring it all to me. Well, king might have to make a little sacrifice here in order to make a super fight. And if you think you can beat Charlo, of course, Charlo, a black boxer with good, fast boxing skills, an American he's built the way American boxers are built. Canelo Alvarez, of course, tries to build that Mexican style, tries to incorporate that Mexican style with some American stuff. Of course, he's really gotten better as far as his defense is concerned. And the fact that he stays conditioned year-round is something that, you know, Mexican fighters have never done in the past. So, like, I guess Larry Holmes says, like Mary Merchant keeps saying, Canelo Alvarez dares to be great. I mean, the fact that, you know, he can be ready on 4 to 5 weeks' notice to make 168 pounds sort of tells me that maybe he can make 168 if he had a couple more weeks. But, you know, 8 pounds is a killer. I talked earlier about making weight, about having to make 141 a couple weeks before a Golden Glove fight and eating 24 ice cream cups at the Sun Valley Dairy afterwards and this and that. You know, I got sick, got a stomach ache and the whole nine yards. But, you know, when you sacrifice, things just go off the hook. They just go off the hook. I mean, you have no restraints. I mean, you've sacrificed like, I remember I didn't eat for 36 hours. Didn't eat or drink any water. I had a couple ice cubes. My mother used to make me these Kool-Aid flavored ice cubes that I would sort of sweat down and wait to and just chomp on ice cubes like for a day and a half. Kool-Aid flavored ice cubes. Outside of the ice cubes, there was no food for the kid. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Time to have some fun with the Tower of Power.
Thank y'all for tuning in. All the fans around the world, we love y'all.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I'm sorry for anyone I let down with this performance. I promise you I wanted this more than anything.
Darkest of night with the moon shining bright. There's a set going strong, a lot of things going on. The man of the hour has an air of great power. The dudes have envied him for so long.
Mom told me it's not bragging when you're telling the truth. Then I found out later that she had stolen that line from Muhammad Ali. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. The UFC rocking and rolling tonight with heavyweights coming to you from Las Vegas in their Apex Center. Alistair Overeem, the former Strikeforce champion, 47-18, taking on Alexander Volkov. The guy's like 6'7", 32-8. Tim Burr, something's going to fall here. And the co-feature, Cody Sandhagen's taking on Frankie Edgar. Of course, Frankie Edgar, the former lightweight champion, now fighting at 135 pounds, dropping 20 pounds, I kid you not. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Of course, we come to you each and every Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. As far as the boxing world is concerned, the 13th, of course, next week, take it back. There is a fight today coming to us from the across the pond on ESPN+. It's Kareem Griffey versus Lee McGregor, some European title. That's February 6th, ESPN+. ESPN+ goes dead next week. Of course, the 13th, they've got ESPN, Joe Smith Jr. versus Maxim Vlasov for the WBO light heavyweight title. Richard Comey's in the co-feature. The 13th, JoJo Diaz is going to be on DAZN. There's a couple of good fights on DAZN that day. The 13th, DAZN's got another card. Josh Warrington and Mauricio Lara. Of course, 17th, Showtime comes back with Jackson Baracachica versus Mark Reyes. So boxing's rocking and rolling. 19th, ESPN Plus coming back with the British lightweight title, Liam Walsh. Wasn't he fighting at 140? Now fighting at 135, taking on Paul Hyland Jr. So boxing's rocking and rolling. You always go to places like BoxRec.com or FightNews.com or BoxingScene.com. Of course, those are probably the best websites as far as boxing is concerned. Of course, the USC, and you can go to SureDog.com maybe, or BloodyElbow.com. Straight up, those are your websites as far as boxing and MMA is concerned that I recommend. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, 35, make that 37. No, 38 plus years now. I'm knocking out all bums. Check out the Sunday edition. We're bringing Larry Mercer. We're going to celebrate his 90th birthday tomorrow on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the Sunday edition with Larry Merchant, Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and 1,000 other internet platforms. Be there or be square. Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, right here on Sports Byline. Larry Merchant's 90th birthday party. Wait.